Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to GeneOliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I am doing something a little different. Today I'm talking with one of my best gals in the world, Alexis Garrett. We are asking each other questions on this episode, and I'm really excited to use this format with her. I met Alexis over 10 years ago when we both traveled to France for a workshop with Kari Ming. I have always said that Alexis was the best treasure I brought back from France. Over the years since, we have traveled together to San Miguel, Mexico, Scotland, Morocco, have spent time with each other's family, and we have watched our businesses grow and change. Alexis, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Would you tell everyone a little bit about you and your business before we get started?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to visiting with you and being on a podcast with you. So I am an interior designer, and I have a small interior design company in San Diego, and we take a few clients a year. And usually when we have a client, they can be anywhere from like a year to 3 years that we really spend a lot of time with them building their home, everything from the architect, even sometimes driving around and looking for property, and going all the way from the beginning to the very end of their project with their towels and their silverware. And, you know, we've had such an amazing experience, creating homes for people that they literally move in and, they can have a party the next day. So, that's really what we do. And we've been dabbling a little bit in some content that we want to keep growing, but the bulk of my business is interior design for residential homes.
Well, I think anybody that ever gets to have you as their designer are the luckiest. And I've loved seeing all the things you're doing throughout the years, but also what's coming. I'm really excited for that.
Thank you, Jean.
We met over 10 years ago in France, and if we both hadn't had this overwhelming pull to sacrifice what needed to be sacrificed, I just know my life would have a huge void. What drew you to that workshop, and what was worth the sacrifice?
Yeah, so at that time, I had a blog called Fern and Feather, and I had a little one at home. I was a newish mom. Henry was 2 years old, and someone who had followed my blog emailed me randomly and said, "Hey, have you heard about this workshop? It seems like it would be so up your alley." And I'd never heard of Kari Ming or French General. And of course, when I looked it up, I was just couldn't think of anything else. And then had to think about how to talk to Ross about it. And, you know, just it felt so far-fetched, not just financially, but just being an at-home mom. What would Henry do for those times I was gone? And the sweetest part about it was when I brought it up to Ross, it was without any hesitation that he said I should go. And so, yeah. Did I answer your question?
You did. I think too, don't you think we've been having those talks with our husbands like ever since? Coming to them and saying, "And we have another adventure we want to go on, and another one, and another one." So they're very understanding about our love for each other and travel and art, and it's pretty sweet. Yeah, all right, your turn.
Okay, so you've been a guiding light for me in so many ways. I think you're the bravest person I know. Where do you think you got your superpower for creating a life exactly how you want it to look? You're the real deal. When you say creatively made business or creatively made life, you really have lived that out. Where do you think that came from?
Well, those are the nicest words too. That's so sweet. I think,
And I think too, to as an adult, to look back on these words and of somebody who I love dearly to say that, I wish I would have been able to know that as a kid. You know, I wish I would have known that that was waiting for me, but I really was that kid always dreaming up new ideas. And I remember singing in my living room to Bruce Springsteen and picturing myself like as the star at the bandstand in our downtown. And I had a great principal in high school who really listened to my ideas, and he would take them and run with them. He made me feel really seen. And then I had a mom that, that always told me that I was really wise and that she could see me like leading people and talking to a lot of people. And she would even say things like, I can see you talking to thousands. So when, you know, and so I remember her saying this many times to me over my life. So the thing is, I pictured that too. I could picture that. And then I think really that I married a husband that also honored me. And not just for what was in it financially for our family, because Kelly didn't know, right? Like he didn't know what it was going to, this was going to turn into. And so he honored my creating in the beginning just because he was honoring me. And so.
I love that. That's so sweet.
All right. So imagine us as preteens. What kind of friends would we have been? And what can you imagine us doing together?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we would have been total goofballs, because one of my favorite things that you've told me about you as a young girl is you on your roller skates. So we would have been on your roller skates, and I would have been, and this is so goofy, but so like San Diego in the 80s, I would have been on my rollerblades, and we would have been like with our Walkmans. And I made mixtapes as a kid. Like was my business. So I think we'd be making mixtapes. And then if you were like my boyfriend in high school, you would have had the pleasure of listening to not only my mixtapes, but me talking in between the songs.
No.
Like, oh my God, dear Lord, tell me those are long burned and gone.
Dear Lord, please tell me they're not. And how can I get my hands on them?
What was I talking about? I really liked the tapes that had like 120 hours. I'd get the really long ones.
Well, have I ever told you the story about the boy in my school who gave me a mixtape of Christian rock? And and I got it home and I started to listen to it, and it was really intense. So I just turned it off and I stopped listening. And the next day at school, he said, oh, did you listen to my tape? And I said, yeah, it was really cool. So I totally lied. And I was in college, and my brother called me and he said, hey, there's this tape here. Can I use it to tape over it? And I said, oh, sure. And then he called me back and he said, Gene, did you know that he was telling you all of his feelings in between all of the songs?
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, no. Oh, I've wanted to search. God. I know. Those mixtapes, they're awesome.
Oh, yeah. So we would have been thick as thieves on our rollerblades listening to our Walkman.
I'm game for that. All right.
Okay, my turn. Okay. So I love the way that you love people who come to your house. You are just so good at hospitality. And so my question for you is, what would be your go-to meal if you have friends coming over for dinner? And these are friends that would be totally fine if you ordered pizza, but if you actually wanted to make something for them, what would you make?
I think anytime we have a lot of people over, I just really like making really big pots of things. So then it's easy for people to serve themselves, and then it makes other people feel more comfortable too. So I love soup. So I think and big salads. And I think just honestly, anything that I've made a million times. So it's like, I'm actually present. So I love making chicken chili or something like that, that I can be making it even if they're right in front of me and I'm not stressing out or being weird while they're there. I'm just being present with them. And it's something that's just really yummy, good food that's comforting. And I think we all like a food that we don't have to make, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to make it. That's the best.
Yep. Yeah, that sounds yummy. I want to come over.
Please. All right. What? Now this question actually came from Jack, which is super sweet because Jack is like pretty much like Alexis's number one fan. So what is the pivotal moment that led to your current career? And what do you think you would be doing without that moment?
Okay. So, you were so sweet to give me some heads up on some of these questions because I'm so bad on the fly. And I've been thinking about this question a lot because even though I've really been doing interior design for 15 years on and off, I've taken times off. This most recent time of doing interior design, I kind of feel like is a whole new way of me thinking about it and doing it. And really that it really was kind of a moment that created that for me. I didn't think I would ever do interior design. I thought that if Ross and I were lucky enough to buy a home, another home, or one day if we could ever build a home, that I would love to do interior design that way for our family. But I didn't, I really just was pretty burnt out about doing it for other people. The truth is, and hopefully none of my old clients listen to your podcast, but it really was wiping me out. I was feeling like, midnight emails and calls on the weekend over sofa color or, you know, things that obviously they're important. I don't mean to, make them sound not important, but it's not heart surgery. We're not saving anyone's lives. And so I kind of was feeling like my profession felt a little bit empty. And so I think what happened with this most recent time of me really growing my business was, and it's really sweet. Trina McNeely, who has La La Lovely, it was a blog that I followed when I had my blog Fern and Feather. She wrote a book and I read her book and there was a line in there that was a big aha moment for me. And it was, she said, beauty is God's form of hospitality. Mm-hmm. And when I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, I actually could serve people with what I love and my passion for interior design. If I thought of it as God's form of hospitality, if I thought that a space that I could create could actually bring something and could serve to someone in a different way, then I'm all in. I want to do it. And so I feel like my most recent, the last basically 5 years of having my business and growing my business and changing from Fern and Feather as my interior design business to just my name, Alexis Garrett Design, is really, it's funny because if any clients listen to this podcast, it's not something that I necessarily advertise that it's my ministry, but I really feel like that. I really feel like the time that I'm able to connect with my clients and the time that I'm able to shop for them, or I'm always dreaming about my clients' homes, and it's, it's business, but it is so personal to me. And I think with Eugene, I found out this year that I'm a number two because I had never done my Enneagram. Mm-hmm. And learning that I'm a number two, which is a helper, it really even put even that in more in practice for me. Mm-hmm. That it's not just a calling, but it's actually my personality. Mm-hmm. To do those kind of acts of service for people. And so... did that answer your question? I think hopefully it did.
It did.
So, okay, my turn again. I forget that we're going back and forth. Okay. okay, let me see. What was it like? I was so proud of you, Jean, when you had your book come out, and it's been so fun to be on this journey with you. And when we met in France, you had Bushel and a Peck, and your business had started that way, and just to see you grow this amazing site and all this incredible network of artists, and just the way that you've blessed people. And it was so fun as your friend to see you come out with your art book. It was really just, as your friend, I was so happy and proud of you. And so I want to know, how did that feel, and what did you learn most from that experience?
Thank you. I think a book was something that it wasn't something that I was wanting to do. Like, usually I have these ideas and they just won't let me go. And that's why those are the things I usually try to follow and walk out. And the book was, the editor came to me and asked me, And so she asked me for a very specific book pitch. She had seen an online class that I was doing. So I first pitched the online class that she had seen, and I pitched that as a book idea. But it wasn't really the book that I had the heart to create if I was going to do one. And she came back at some point and said, is there anything else instead that you would want to do? And if she wouldn't have asked me that one question, you know, we would have created that other book instead. And I didn't. I came back with the class Reflections Paint Your Story was the online class that I took that content and pitched that. And she loved it so much. And that was the book that ended up getting made. I think it's a hard thing. Like when you're a creative or when you're an artist specifically, I can go into my studio, I can make something, I can see so much come out of something in a day, right? Or you can spend weeks or an online class. I think about it for a long time. I plan out things for a while, but then when I hit the ground running on it, I'm really able to create it within a week or two. So writing a book is a very different experience for somebody who's used to seeing results pretty quickly. And so it's something that without an editor and without a deadline and without a publisher saying, this is what you have to do to stay on track, I don't think I would have accomplished it. Because it's a long journey for somebody who's used to, you know, moving on to the next thing. And I think though, when it was all said and done, it was harder than I thought it would have ever been. And I think it was the first thing that in a long time that I had put out that I realized was not just going to be on my site. It was going to go out to Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And I thought about it was going to literally go to the world. It wasn't going to be on my safe place on the internet, right? It wasn't. And so it was instantly obvious to me again, I was doing something that was opening up that people could hate it, that people, it might not have been for them, or maybe they don't like my style or my art or a million things. But the thing is, it's really good to walk through things like that because they truly make you stronger. And you're able to take people's opinion and you're able to let it go and you're able to see what you want to do better. And so for me in the end, like I said, it was very hard. But I think in the end, it was so amazing that I had this thing in my hand. A lot of the things I do are digital, or a lot of things that I do, the originals go to other people. And so to hold this book in my hand, to have my kids go to Barnes and Noble or to a small bookstore, or we're out and about and we stumble across it, is still the best. I mean, that's the most fun. And then it's something that's forever. And it's something that I accomplished that really was more of a long-term project. And at the time, that probably was the biggest long-term project I had done. So.
That's awesome.
All right. So it's my turn.
Okay.
What is the best book you've ever read? And you have to actually share one that you finished, because we both know you can't say Ninth Street Women that I gave you, because it is super large. And the only reason I finished Ninth Street Women was because I listened to it on Audible last year when I traveled like crazy. And so, cause sometimes I'll think Alexis read the whole book and then she'll be like, oh no, I didn't finish it. I'm like, what?
The only time I mean, this is terrible, but truly the best chances of me finishing the book is if I'm not at home, because yeah. At home I tend to read like 10 pages and then I have to start them over again cause I forgot. But, so, oh gosh, I was thinking about so many different books that have been so pivotal to me. And I think one of the reasons I have a hard time finishing books is I tend to be drawn to books that are super heavy. And I love books that maybe I'm just super dramatic, but I love books that will change my life. Like mm-hmm. I want a book that's going to change my perspective and yeah. grow me. And so I have a list of books and I'm not going to tell you, I mean, I'm not going to bore everyone with all of them, but I have
share 10 titles. Share 10 titles. That's okay. Or five.
I dwindled it down to my top three books that have been so impactful to me. So the first one is Tattoos on the Heart by Father Boyle. And I was introduced to Father Boyle about 20 years ago at my brother's commencement speech from college. And he spoke, and my brother and I both went to Santa Clara University. And being in that stadium with, you know, now we're, I feel like I can identify what it was more than I didn't know what it was really then, but really a stadium of white privilege, truly. And listening to Father Boyle, who is just one of the most amazing humans on earth. He's really dedicated his life to unconditional love for the people in the world that need it so desperately. And he's created something, an organization called Homeboy Industries. And, you know, his book is The Power of Boundless Compassion. He's just shown the most amazing compassion and ways to love people, whether it's taking someone from out of jail to JCPenney to buy a suit for their first interview, or letting, you know, the community of homeless sleep in his church. He just is boundless, unconditional love. I mean, just like no end to his love. And that he moved me. I was crying. I remember just being so moved during that commencement speech. And so whenever the book came out, it was a little after that, Tattoos on a Heart, that it just opened my eyes. I had such a different view of what the ghetto was and what gangs were, and listening to him talk about, I'll never forget sitting there and listening to him say, like, it's not a choice. It's not a choice to be in a gang. It's really, what's your address? Okay, this is the gang you're in. So that's one book. I feel like that is just such an amazing heart changer, an eye opener. The other one that was so pivotal for me was Brené Brown, Braving the Wilderness. That book, to me, there's so many things I took away from that book, but one thing that I think about all the time is that we all have different stories. We all have a different way of looking at the world. And, you know, I find this a lot in my family. We all have different ways of seeing things. And what she really taught me in that book was that she tells a story about being at a concert, and they're all just like arms around each other, and they're having collective joy, she called it. They're singing at the top of their lungs, and their arms around each other. And I think they're singing Baton Rouge, and they're just like on their chairs. Like she said, I would kiss the person next to me. And that's collective joy, is like finding something that it doesn't even have to be find something that you have in common. It's just find something, whether it's dancing or sharing a meal or something, where your hearts can connect. And then she said, but if they weren't singing Baton Rouge and they started talking about gun control, you know, we wouldn't have been putting our arms around each other, and I wouldn't have wanted to kiss the person next to me. And so I think she really softened my heart to how to love when there's all different opinions. And I just think that's such an important thing for us to learn is, and I'm learning it. I don't know it, but it really helped me in that. And then the other one, and these are not in any order. Well, actually they might be in order of the order I've read them, but, Shannon Martin, Falling Free from the Life I Always Wanted. I love that book. I remember I called you after it. I'm like, you know her. I love her. So much. I think I read her book in like 18 hours. Like, for a person who doesn't finish a book, I finished that book I didn't even go to work. I'm like, I just have to finish this. I loved it because she was kind of in that same blog time of, you know, everyone wants to move out to the farm and bake pies and hang their, you know, have chickens and hang their sheets on the line. And she did that. And what she found was that was the life that she thought she wanted, but it wasn't the life she needed. And I just loved her sentiment of courage over comfort. And that just moved me. It moved me so much that we create these really comfortable places for us to be, but that our hearts aren't changing. Our hearts aren't evolving in that comfort. And I think those are the three books that I felt that I really feel have been powerful and have really worked on my heart.
No, I love all three of those books. And obviously Shannon's book, but I heard about Tattoos on the Heart from Shannon and then read that one too. And Brené Brown's book, Braving the Wilderness, that was a huge book for me too. In fact, I had just finished my book and we went camping and I read it like over, you know, a day and a half too, while we were camping, and I just couldn't put it down. I kept on stopping and trying to tell my family, listen to this, listen to this. And so
the worst place on the planet to be is with Alexis Garrett on a lounge chair at the pool while you're trying to relax. And I'm reading a Brené Brown book because every 3 minutes, I'm like, no, you have got to hear this. Let me read you this line. Ross should just look at me like, you're killing me right now.
Could you go to the other side of the pool, please?
Yeah. Okay, my turn. Switching gears. If you could only grab two art supplies from your studio, what would they be?
Okay.
I want to know because I'm going to put them in my basket.
Okay. A charcoal pencil. So I always love charcoal. So any form of charcoal. And then it's hard because I'm assuming if I just had to choose two, it's for working small or maybe not necessarily, but I would say it's either between watercolors or a Stabilo, a black Stabilo. So,
charcoal, it's not a Stabilo because I always think of you as Stabilos.
No. So a charcoal, So a charcoal pencil and then the black Stabilo. And then I love watercolors too. For like, if I'm going to just bring a couple things with me, those are things that I would definitely have with me all the time.
I love how you taught me, and this is something I actually have been doing it as almost like a devotional in the morning, and I think I even sent you a picture of it. I've been just sketching and watercoloring what's on our table, and it could be everything from like a Lego to Conrad is really obsessed with putting jars of water and objects in the jars in the freezer. So, you know, whatever is on our table, I've been drawing. And you are so good at that with your little bags that you need to start selling again. And having that little zipper bag with a few art supplies that I love it, whether we're going camping or, like I said, on my breakfast table or whatever, just to have the little bag full of.
I think we can just get super overwhelmed by all the things, and we love all the things, right? I mean, but then when you pare it down, and if you just have like a mechanical pencil and you just have that charcoal pencil, or you just have some, that small watercolor like journal on you. And if we make the choice, I'm going to sketch what's in front of me instead of getting on my phone again, because I mean, I'm totally guilty of that. It's not like I'm saying I always am creating. I mean, I totally waste so much time. And then when I connect with my creativity, then it's just like, man, I'm missing out. I'm missing out on becoming a better artist, but I'm actually missing out on just being more present. And so I love when you show those sketches, all you're saying is I'm really seen today. And there's all this stuff around us and it's so noisy and there's so much and there's good stuff out there too, but it's to take a couple minutes in the day and to just really look at, it's way more beautiful than we give it credit for.
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
You are really, really nice. So I don't know if you have any, but do you have any pet peeves?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I,
just so you guys know, Alexis is way nicer than me.
No.
So true.
That's not true. So, I mean, my quick response is stepping on Legos, but I mean, I have like a quick response and then I have like deep responses. I think my deep response is, and I'm not saying I don't do this, but, and so something I'm always working on, but that is when people have a hard time seeing things from other people's position, that bugs me. The other thing that bugs me, and I don't know, it's not a pet peeve as much as it like hurts my feelings, is when I get invited to someone's house and they know I'm an interior designer and they are apologizing about their space. That truly, I mean, I don't know if pet peeve's the right word. It actually hurts my heart. It makes me feel so bad. It makes me feel like, gosh, I can't believe you were like setting your table worried that I was going to be judging your table. That's actually probably one of the things I like least about my job when people find out what I do, because having someone invite you into their home for a meal, I think is like one of the sweetest gestures and such a honor to be able to share a meal with someone in their home. And I just never want anyone to invite me over that feels bad. Like, please order pizza and let's do paper plates. And we can drink natty ice. Is that a thing? Natural ice beer. Like, I don't care. I just want to be with the people I love. I never want them to apologize for their space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So you are just one of my guiding light for being a mama. And you have been since I met you when Henry was two. I just have always admired not only your kids and how they've turned out, and I've had such a privilege to spend a lot of time with them at times, and even have Ben and Maddie at my house for 2 weeks, which was the best. And I think about, you know, now my kids aren't as old as your kids, but now even when I have friends that have new babies, I think, oh gosh, if I could do it all again, I wouldn't worry about this or I wouldn't worry about that. And so now you have Jack in college. Well, actually, now he's back.
But you know, he's hoping he gets to go back.
I know. I hope so. You have a son in college. What do you wish your younger self as a mother would have known?
I think I look back and I feel like so much of like how he turned out is just, you know, him too, you know. But I think the thing that I was glad we did, and I even wish I would have done it more, but I'm like, I would think one of the best things, I know it's not your question, but like to just hug and touch and let physical touch just be a part of, not just when they're little, but as they grow older, and do it even when they act like they don't want it, because they still do. And so I feel like that's something that if you do that, you still have that 20-year-old that'll sit and hold hands with you or, you know, hug you for a long time, or just put their head against you or cuddle up. And so, and I have to think, like, cause sometimes I'll think, oh yeah, we did that really well. And then I'll hear back that we really didn't. I think that's been the hardest thing. Like, mom, you know, like, we didn't talk about this and you didn't talk enough about this. And I thought we did a really good job. You know, I'm a talker. I mean, and so I'm always learning and I'm always, and so I feel like, man, we talked about so many things and hard things. And then he, you know, he went off to school and he's like, mom, we didn't talk enough about that. And I didn't really have my own opinions about that. And that's part of just growing up. And he needed to have opinions that weren't ours also. And so I would just say, like, just to love and touch, but talk, because I thought we did a really great job. And then to hear like, well, we didn't talk about that. And I'm like, I'm sure we did. And I thought we had, and I thought we did this over and over again. And yeah. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I thought I was really, you know, like probably overkill. I mean, they used to say that car rides were awkward conversations with mom. Because if I had... if I had one of them one-on-one, I mean, I'm telling you, I was talking to them about, you know, relationships or, you know, their bodies or about faith, or I was talking about like all kinds of things. And they're like, dear God, when will this car ride end? And so, but the truth was, it still wasn't enough. Like, yeah. And the thing is, now that Jack's home and he's been home, you know, from the quarantine and everything more, I mean, man, he's the same now as a 20-year-old as he was at four. Like, why? But now, like, he's a well-read and well, you know, he really, my hope for homeschooling was that he would learn to love learning and it would continue with him. And he is. I mean, he's very inquisitive and he's very well read and he has his own opinions that are very separate from mine. And sometimes that's very uncomfortable, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard when the people closest to you, like when you said, like you guys, you might have really different opinions, and how do you love each other in the midst of having really different opinions? Mm-hmm. But isn't that what we raise them to do? Right? Like to Like, what do you think? And what do you want to do?
I haven't even considered my kids having different opinions.
Oh, yeah. Well, believe me, it comes. And so really, I would say, like, love and touch and hold and cuddle and rub backs. And I mean, because if you do, you're going to get to do it forever. And I believe that. Mm-hmm. And then talk, and all the things that, because yeah, I don't know. I know that even now, I'm 48 and my kids are 13, 17, and 20. And at the end of the day, I'm tired. I get into bed and I'm tired. And I remember even feeling that as a young mom. And we just, like, I know, like, you're tired, but like those opportunities of why, they're just, they're really good moments to help them to grow up to be these people that, like, that we want them to be, and the world needs them to be, the world needs them to be. So
yeah, I love that. I wish I could remember what it was. Darn it. But we'll probably remember when we're off. But there was something, it was a podcast that I was listening to, and it was all about how we have all these like micro opportunities, you know, we have all, and it's like, you know, your son for the 12th time telling you he needs a glass of water and you're just like, go to sleep. But, you know, it's all those like little tiny micro opportunities to have those conversations that are so easy to go, I'm just too tired. Like, get yourself some water, or you're not thirsty, or whatever.
And I think some of the hard thing is, because we're watching it right now in the world in so many different areas. And sometimes where I thought I was doing a really good job, the truth is, like, I was struggling with the answers too. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers. But I usually feel like there's a starting point, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that was a part of it, that that we can admit to each other, I don't have all the answers, but let's look for them together. Tell everyone about finding your home, what was so different about it, and how you've made it your own. Because I love this story.
Oh gosh. Okay. So we've lived in our home for just a little over 5 years now. And we had a house in Cardiff in San Diego, and we loved that home so much. I actually, as much as I love our home now, I still probably on a weekly basis, we've lived in this house for 5 years, I still dream about it. And I have a really creepy dream. So if someone listens to your podcast that lives in that house, because a few people have lived in it since, I literally have the creepiest dream that they go to the grocery store and I come in and pretend it's my house.
I love such that a house though. When I think of the most perfect, it's a perfect house. It was
a simple house. There was nothing fancy about it. It was just a super special house. And I think a lot of it was just the memories we had in that house. We had our wedding reception in the backyard. And
I know you think that, but it's bigger than that, because I mean, every time I had been there, it was just a great floor plan. It was exactly what you needed. Nothing that you didn't.
Into that house. Yeah. There was every little square into that house was used and loved and polished and painted, and you know, we just loved it. And we truly did the work ourselves. When we first got married, you know, we didn't have any money, and we just, like, we would work on it after work, and we even camped in the yard while we did that house. I'm talking about my old house, and you asked me about my new house, but I guess it's part of the story is that I loved our old house so much, and we had no plans of moving. But I was visiting with a girlfriend after drop off, and hey, what'd you do this weekend? You know, nothing, like just talking, chit chat in the school parking lot. And she said, you know, it's so weird. I went to this open house and I thought of you the entire time. And I said, oh, well, where's the house? And she said, it's in Leucadia. And it's just, I don't know, there's something about it that just made me think of you. And she had just moved from Australia and they desperately needed a house. They were like in a month-to-month rental and they really needed to find a home. And she said, you know, I'm just moving here from Australia, it's like too much for me to think about renovating the house. And this house needs a ton of work. It's like literally falling over. She's like, but I just think you would think it's the most special house. And so I got home and I looked it up on Zillow, and she she was right. It was so intriguing and interesting, and it was falling over, but I was totally interested in it. And so Ross was randomly working from home that day, which is unusual because he commutes. And so I kind of got my ducks in a row without really telling him the full story, just to see if it would even work out to go look at it. And so I called my cousin, who's a realtor, and said, "Hey, Lance, can you find out whatever you can find out about this house?" I gave him the address. And he said, "You know what? The house has been on the market for like 2 days. It has three offers." And he said, "Why don't you, I'll call the agent and see if they'll let us see it." So he called me right back. He goes, "They'll let you see it. They're letting everyone who's put in an offer come at, 2 o'clock or whatever today." And this was a Monday. And he said, "You can come, you can go and look at it. I'll meet you there." So I lined up a babysitter and I wrote a letter and I found some cute pictures of my kids. And I walked into Ross's office and I said, "Hey, babe, do you think that we could go at like 2 o'clock to go see this historical home in Leucadia?" And he's looking at me like, "What? Why are we doing that?" I said, "It will only take like a half hour. Can you just take a break and come with me?" He's like, "Okay." So we get ready to go. And I've got my letter, my pictures. I mean,
Ross, I actually think Ross should have known better by then. I really just think that's...
We were living in the same house for 9 years and we hadn't even talked about moving. So he goes into the living room and we're about to leave and he goes, "You got a babysitter for the boys?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, I don't think that they need to come." You know, it's so weird. So we get to the house and we are walking around this house and I am like in full tears, like so psycho lady. That was me. I'm like in prayer position crying, going like, "Dear Lord, why am I here? Dear Lord, why am I here? This house is so amazing." And just everything about it, just like, I don't know. It was so amazing. But I'm, brushing shoulders with people who had already had offers in it and they had like nice cars. We were like in our beat up like 200,000 mile Prius. I'm like, "There's no way this is happening." I was so sad. And so I cried to the agent. I was a hot mess. And I told my cousin, "Okay, well, what do we have to do to make this, what do we have to do?" And I got a little ahead of myself. I forgot to tell you the part where I'm crying. I'm walking around the house by myself. My cousin and Ross are walking around the house. Ross and I meet up in the dining room and I have to be as cool as I can because I'm totally the freak show emotional person in our marriage. And I knew if I was a freak show that he would it wouldn't work out. And so I tried to be really calm and collected. And I said, "Oh, so what do you think about this house?" And he grabbed my arm and said, "We have to do everything in our power to make this our home." And it was like, okay, it's on. This is on. So I asked my cousin, "What do we need to make an offer for?" And anyways, it was just a complete, we were the fourth offer. We put in the offer on Monday. Wednesday, our offer was accepted. And the only contingency was crazy because I guarantee other people offered more money. The only contingency was that they wanted to have a 25-day escrow. So it was just, I don't know. It all worked out. And then we put our house on the market that Friday. So from Monday to Friday, we put our house on the market. I called a really good friend of ours to list it. And he was really worried about me. He's like, "What? You're listing your house? Like, what happened?" So we put the house on the market and we sold the house that weekend. On Monday, our house was sold and they had a 30-day escrow. They asked for a 30-day escrow. And in that 1 month, we moved and sold our house. It was pretty wild.
That's amazing. So I know I'm going to take another question, but I'm going to roll this in. What are 5 things that you think every home should have?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I thought about this. So here's my 5. A garden box. And it doesn't even have to be fancy. It can be a pot with Swiss chard in it and parsley or something from seed. It can be super simple, but just growing something that you can walk in your house. It could even be a lemon tree. Just growing something at your house that you incorporate in your meals is the most satisfying thing. That I would say a Dutch door. I just love Dutch doors. And we actually don't have one at this house. I would love to find a way to make one, but I just think they're the most special doors. I love them. And I always incorporate them in the homes that we design. A laundry line. I am definitely don't hang everything, but I know when I'm hanging my laundry, I'm the most present. Mm. I'm the most aware. I'm the most grateful. Oh my gosh. Okay. Wait, that was three. My fourth one is good coffee. And then my fifth one is a room in your house that, there's no TV where you can read or listen to music.
Yeah. Oh, I love them. That's beautiful.
What is something in your life that you feel is painful to go through, but ultimately has made you a stronger and wiser person?
I think there's one thing that I think I'm getting closer to being able to talk about that I haven't been able to talk about yet. And so there, you know, and not to be afraid to talk about it. And I feel like I'm closer to that, but that's not what I'm going to share today. but I think the next thing, when I think of something that was just really painful to walk through that really made me stronger and wiser, I would say would be my parents' divorce, which, you know, I know people get divorced all the time, and mine got divorced while I was an adult, and it was still devastating. And I mean, my family wasn't perfect, and it wasn't great before the divorce. A lot of the same reasons that led to the divorce were the reasons for years it wasn't good, but it was still like our family. So even a broken family still feels like it's comforting and good, and it's what I went back to. And so was really hard, but it really helped me to stay on track, I think, because it's easy, even in my own marriage or relationships with other people, to make sure that there's things that should be just common, like no secrets, right? Like no secrets that are huge like that, and that your money is open to each other. And it was why our studio is on our land and at our home, so my kids would always know that I want them there. And that marriage is just like in so many other things, like don't ever think that you're not capable of an affair. Cause I think everybody is like, and so to guard your heart and your mind and your marriage in so many ways. And I know it's really hard work, but it was hard to have our family fall apart for good and for real. But I think it made me be more intentional about the kind of marriage and the family that I wanted to have too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel you on that, a lot.
So it's my turn. Don't be thinking you're going to get another one. So we met in France, and we've had many long trips together to Mexico and Scotland and England and Morocco, and then little trips throughout the U.S. We've also spent time at each other's homes, and I've never traveled like this with anyone else except for Kelly. So why do you think we travel well together? And the next question would be, where do you think our next travel adventure should be?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
First, why we travel well together, in your opinion.
Okay, I think we travel really well together because we both have such a curiosity for other cultures and art and architecture and music and food. And I think we just have so much fun experiencing it together. And I think we share a similar curiosity and awe of just like being in these places. I have so many memories I can think of that I don't know if everyone would have appreciated it as much as we did together, whether it was eating cake in the carriage house in France and stitching until 2 a.m. and laughing our butts off, to, you know, walking like 10 miles in Marrakesh. You know, I just think that you and I have a huge desire for adventure and seeing new things and new experiences. And I also think that we do well with each other. I mean, I think you would have been a super good college roommate, because we share a space really well together, where whether we have to sleep in a full-size bed together or, you know, we have a bigger room, I think that we do it well.
We do. All right. So where do you think our next travel adventure should be?
Okay. So can we please go back to France?
Yes. Yes. Let's go back to France.
We have to go back to France. I want to go back to France with like 10 bags, 9 of them empty and 1 of them full of art supplies.
Yeah. All right. I'm game. Yes, let's do it. It'd
be super amazing if we could do that. And then our husbands, meet us just
there.
Our husbands and kids could meet us there, and then we could adventure for a little bit together. Oh my gosh. I just think that would be like amazing.
Yeah. I think it's a great idea.
Can you ask her that for your 50th birthday? And then I'll just say like, that's what she wants, guys.
I'm not 50 yet though. I'm only 48.
But is that too long to wait 2 years?
No, I want to go next year. So let's do it next year.
Who is someone that you've always looked up to and admired?
I think just artists and creatives in general. I was really, just from a young age, was drawn to them. I remember that in college when I had not pursued art, and then my cousin Jen, we were at Christmas in Alabama seeing our family, and she was an interior designer, student, and she pulled out her portfolio and she was showing everybody her things. And I felt just so, it's like I knew I had done everything wrong. Like I knew that I had not followed what I wanted to truly follow. And there was just a point of just huge disappointment, even in that. I don't even know if I've ever shared that with her, just at, like watching her pull things out of her portfolio and just feeling like so off track for myself. And so, but over my lifetime, I think of the people I looked up to. It was really like my grandma Jean. She was filled her house with art and music, and she was a composer and a pianist. And my aunt Melinda was a Broadway dancer, and my aunt Beverly was she collected gorgeous art, and she was a piano teacher. And my aunt Jeanette, nobody could entertain and love on people better through food and home than her. And then I always knew like that my mom was the kind of mom I hoped I could be. And so I feel like I was surrounded by, and I think it's pretty rare, like 5 women, all very different, all think different, in all different ways. But I feel like to be surrounded by 5 really amazing women, I don't think that's normal. And I think that it's such a gift that the people that really inspired me growing up were the women right around me.
I love that. That's so cool.
Well, for my birthday this year, I celebrated during the quarantine. So Alexis, you set up a Zoom call with 2 of my other really good friends, and you had everyone make the same cocktail. And so when we all got on the call, we were all drinking the same thing. And it really was one of the sweetest birthdays I've ever had with how the whole day went, start to finish. But I really felt so just celebrated and loved on. So you are so good at homemaking and loving well through home and food, and you make killer cocktails. So what is the cocktail you are making more lately? And guys, I'll share the recipe in the links below too.
Okay. So this is not fancy. And
nobody has time for fancy. That's why we go out and let somebody else make that.
So I was really on to martinis about 2 weeks ago, and that just was like a slow downhill for me. That was not a good plan. So I am now drinking margaritas. It's feeling like so summery, and I don't know, a margarita just, where we're at home so much right now, a margarita is just like, to me, it's like the quintessential, like out and at the beach and just having an awesome day. And so I've been making those, and the way I make my margaritas is not fancy, guys. And it's super duper easy. I just actually buy a margarita mix, and there's one I like in particular. It's called like organic agave, and it's really low in sugar because it's just like the sugar's agave, and it's fresh lime. I'm sure I could make all this by hand, but please, this is just a quick cocktail. And so then I've been doing that, and then equal parts with tomato juice. That'd be disgusting.
Do not make this cocktail. Maybe she's been drinking already. Do not put tomato juice in your margarita.
Okay, so organic agave margarita mix. And so if I did like a cup of that, I would do a cup of orange juice. And then I'd probably just do another cup of tequila. And I would, and then I'd slice up some jalapeno. And I'd put all of that together in ice, and I shake it up in a giant ball jar, and I set it on the table. And first one to finish wins. I don't know. They're the best.
That's awesome. All right.
I just a big bowl of guacamole and chips. And
that sounds awesome. Okay. I'm going to ask you one more question. If you were not a designer, what would your alternative career choice be? Go.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know. I can't think of anything. I thought I was going to be a teacher, and I can't even like help out in the classroom. I don't know what I was thinking I'd be a teacher. So I wouldn't be a teacher, but I don't know. I think I would try to figure out some way to travel the world and shop for treasures. Is that a job?
It's a job. I know people that do it. Yes. All right. Would you please tell our listeners where they can find you and learn more about your lifestyle and design services?
Sure. So my website is just alexisgarrett.com. And then on Instagram, you can find me at alexisgarrettdesign. I think, and I'm not on anything else. I don't have Facebook or Twitter or any of those things. So those are really the only two ways.
That's awesome. To find me. And guys, I'll have all of the links after the podcast. And you guys don't even know how impressed we are that we made this through without dying laughing, because we had to do like 20 restarts at the beginning. And so, yeah, this has gone way longer because of how many times we've had to cut and edit out. And Kelly will not enjoy editing this one. But sorry, Alexis, Kelly. I love you so much. Thank you for coming on the podcast and being here. And this was really fun.
Thank you so much.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.